pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Yes, second half of the program begins right now. Call it the two-minute warning around the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories where they're happening. It's brought to you today by our friends at Family Leisure. I got to get out to Family Leisure. Going to try to get out there this weekend. Patio furniture. Getting some patio furniture. They got great selection right now, and it's their floor model clearance sale. So if you're looking to save a buck, go on out there. They got a great sale going on right now. And if you mention A10, mention the program, mention Petro, just let them know you heard it right here. You can save even more. It's at Family Leisure, K10 and Ridgeview. Dennis and his staff, locally owned and operated. They're the best in the world to deal with, whether it's patio furniture, hot tubs, spas, pools, poker tables, pool tables, bar stools, the bar itself, theater chairs, you name it. So much great stuff. Be careful when you go there. You're going to want to go home with the entire store. K10 and Ridgeview online at familyleisure.com. Let's get things started in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, easy for me to say. Eitan Shander, Fox 29, is there. Eitan, how are you, my friend?
You get my name flawless, but you can't get the state, you know?
Yeah.
People butcher it all the time.
It's difficult. It's a mouthful.
Sorred, how are you, my friend?
I am great. Isn't it great that we're both getting ready to watch and cover conference championship games?
If I can, at the end of our very short time here, I just have one small question that I felt compelled I had to ask you because I know you have a relationship with Coach Reed, but I'm here for you, brother, whatever you need.
Okay, I'll give you that here at the end. Let's start with the Eagles, though. How healthy is Jalen Hurts headed into this game?
Nobody's on the injury report. Now, I know, okay, well, Patrick Mahomes, but Jalen Hurts is fine, and here's the difference. There's nuance to this. Anybody who knows sports knows that guys play through injury. Sports athletes, women, men, anybody playing plays through injury. So Jalen Hurts probably has some pain there, but when you ask, and when we look at, well, is Jalen Hurts hurt, does that mean there's going to be limitations to his play? Absolutely not. So there is no concern about what Nick Sirianni wants to do with the football with Jalen Hurts. There's no concern about Jalen Hurts' confidence about running or anything along those lines. The game plan will not change or alter one bit. It's just he's probably, playing through a little pain, but who cares? He doesn't care.
Yeah, and that's good to hear because the running part of his game is certainly a big part of his game. The passing, he's been fantastic throwing the football, and that's where he made the biggest stride, something you have to do if you're going to be a long-term starter at the quarterback position. So he has been great. How about the defense? It's two great defensive teams. Do you expect this to be, low scoring? Are we looking at some kind of old school 16-13 type football game?
Yeah, this is interesting, and I think what you have are two defenses that match up well with offenses that are just insane. Now, you have Brock Purdy in there, but he hasn't hurt this team by any means. He's just nowhere near as electric, dynamic, and impactful as a Jalen Hurts is. But the point is, in your question, and I think where you're leaning here and where I am as well, is these defenses are good enough to impact the game and neutralize drives, cause a turnover, take points off the board. I think that both of these coaches know, and also as aggressive as Kyle Shanahan is, I didn't even know Jake Elliott was still on his team for like a 6-week stretch because all he did was kick off, and who watches that? They barely kicked field goals because they just kept going for it on fourth down. In this case, the combination of it being as tight as it can be in a championship game, also both of these defenses, the Niners really do a great job slowing down the run, something the Eagles rely on, and the Eagles have four guys with 10-plus sacks this year. Nobody's done that before. They can get to the impenetrable fortress that surrounds Brock Purdy. I think it's an underplay. I think we see, high 30s, low 40s at most, and both of these teams are kind of feeling each other out for a half.
I racked my brain there for all of about 30 seconds to decide if I'd ever heard somebody lose the opening press conference worse than Nick Sirianni did and then seem to end up dominating the performance of actually coaching the team. I can't think of anybody else who had a worse opening press conference that has been as impressive as he has been. 2 years, two playoffs, now on the brink of going to the Super Bowl. When did everybody in Philadelphia know he is the guy? And I asked that. I know it could be simple. Oh, when they went to the playoffs last year. Lots of teams in the first. We have four teams that went to the playoffs under first-year head coaches this year. I'll bet half of them are fired within 4 years, right? That's not the marker. When did it become clear that Sirianni, okay, I think they really did get it right?
Jalen Hurts. And the same with Jonathan Gannon on the defense. We started to see Fletcher Cox, Jonathan Hargraves. I mean, just count the four guys on. We started to see on the field that they had one of the, if not the best, deepest offensive line. And I know you guys are about to go up against the deep line, but the Eagles are something else. When we started to see that on the field, Soren, and I think, to your point, it wasn't last year. It was this year. It was, okay, now Nick Sirianni is making coaches jealous because he's able to call plays. He's able to design stuff that you write on napkins in the NFL draft at a bar, some just thinking about how you could turn the game into Madden. Well, he's got Jalen Hurts. And on the other side, he's got a defense that no matter what the coordinator does or says or fails to adjust, they're always going to bail them out. And I think Nick Sirianni, Jonathan Gannon are strong coaches, and they deserve the accolades, and Sirianni's going to be here, rightfully so, for a while. But this game is won on the field unless you're Belichick, unless you're Andy Reid, unless you're a small percentage guy. He's not that yet. You mentioned the four teams with the first-year coach. He's not that yet, but he's smart enough to understand he can take risks and be aggressive and do things that aren't conventional because he has this amazing group of talent that he on both sides of the ball.
All right, give me your prediction on the game. Who wins? What kind of score?
34-17. I think the Eagles pull away. And look, we've talked Eagles all year. I'm not a blowout homer type, but I think San Francisco is going to struggle offensively keeping up with Philadelphia.
All right, we'll see if it happens. Hit me with your question.
How bad or how incentivized, maybe is the right term, will Andy Reid be to beat the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl?
Not near as much as the people of Philadelphia would like to think. I believe he liked and enjoyed his time in Philadelphia, but knew it was time for a change. And I think the Eagles knew it was time for a change. And I think he harbors no ill will towards anybody back there. And he embraces the situation he's in right now. I've had several conversations about it. And, you know, there's never been any, not even a hint of any kind of anger or frustration. And not towards the organization either. Nothing but positives when it comes to it. So I think it'll be a bigger deal for Eagles fans than it will be Andy Reid.
I love you, man, because I'm not shocked by anything that you said from our conversations, from covering Coach Reid in Philadelphia. And you're right. It's all going to be made up by local people here in Philly.
Yeah.
Myself, but I know better.
Yeah. Eitan, let's hope we get that game, my friend. I look forward to having that discussion.
Thanks, Reb.
Josh Marlowe is in Charlotte, North Carolina, 92.7 WFNZ. Josh, how are you, sir?
Good evening, man. I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. How are you today?
Good. Frank Reich, what's the opinion poll amongst fans about the hire of Frank Reich as the head coach?
Yeah, I think I'll start off by saying this. We're all happy with the hire with Frank Reich. He's a guy that's a proven winner in the NFL with a 40-33 and one overall record, but we're really disappointed for Steve Wilks because we thought he had done enough on the field, going 6-6 as the interim, had done enough, you know, turning a locker room that had turned sour on Matt Rhule to a locker room that believed in him. And so we're disappointed he didn't get the job, but David Tepper told us back in October that, you know, Steve Wilks had to do an incredible job to get the full-time position. He didn't do that, and he wanted an offensive guy all along, and he got them in the mold of Frank Reich.
How many defensive coaches are coaching in the conference championship round as head coaches?
There are zero, as of the last time I looked, that are still coaching in championship weekend in the National Football League.
Yeah, and I think, and listen, and we've talked about it, and we watch Eric Bieniemy not get job after job after job, and I think I think you'd be a fool to not say whether it's 1% or 27%. There's some percentage that racism with uber-wealthy old white guys is still an element that's there. I think you'd be a fool to say that there's none of that left in the game. But I think the bigger issue, and I think racism gets into this, is the vast majority are either offensive coordinators that either played quarterback or formerly coached the quarterback position. African Americans are not getting a chance to coach the quarterback position, which leads you directly to offensive coordinator, which makes you the most attractive hire. That's the problem. And I hear that Steve Wilkes' lawyer is mentioning race as an issue here. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, frankly, if he has the lawsuit. I appreciate it, and I'm with you. I was rooting for him, and I think he deserved consideration for Coach of the Year for the job that he did once he took it over. But if I'm an owner, I would never hire Steve Wilkes, not because of the color of his skin, because he doesn't coach the most important part of the game, quarterback.
Yeah, we actually had that discussion today on our show about, you know, why are there less and less African-American offensive coordinators in the league right now? The last time we checked, there's one around the National Football League, and maybe that's something that's got to change within the African-American, I guess, coaching community, if you will, is they got to look at it and say, we got to start making our way on the offensive side of the football if we want to become a head coach in the National Football League in the next 3 to 5 years. Because even though defense, I think, resurged in a lot of different ways around the league this year, these owners, they want young, offensive, bright minds. Even though Carolina didn't get that in the mold of Frank Reich, they did get a guy that has coached offense and coached offense at a high level, and that's only going to continue moving forward from these owners' perspective.
Do we like the position? I actually think Frank Reich's a good hire. I think that, you know, I'll bet he's thrilled to not be in Indianapolis and deal with the goof fest that is ownership there. What do we think about the timeline on the turnaround and what he will do at the quarterback position?
I think that he can win in year one. I think this is a really good roster. They got enough pieces, I think, given the state of the NFC South, to where they could compete to win maybe 9, 10, I'd say 11 games at the absolute most. I was of the belief that Sam Darnold should be this team's starting quarterback going into next season if Steve Wilkes got the job. My mind changes with Frank right now in Carolina. You've got enough, you know, at 9, you don't have to give up a whole lot to move up into the top 5 to get your quarterback. So I do think they will take a quarterback, whether it's at 9 in the mold of Will Levis, Anthony Richardson. But I wouldn't be surprised. Scott Fitterer loves to trade. I wouldn't be surprised they move up into that top 5 to be a player for Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud.
All right, real quick, let's talk some college basketball. Where is the patience with the Duke faithful with John Shire and the slow start that a talented team that a lot was expected from is off to?
Well, I'll answer your question from the perspective of a Tar Heel fan that fired Hubert Davis in the middle of January last season. This Duke team is extremely young, and there's a lot of pressure on the shoulders of Jeremy Roach. They're going to figure it out. John Shire knows too much about the game of basketball. He played it at a high level. I don't know if it's going to happen this season. There shouldn't be long-term concerns, though, about him running that Duke program. Their defense is actually as good as it's been since the 2015 run to the national title for them. So if they can get just some average perimeter shooting, this team will still be a force to reckon with as we make our way towards March.
Yep, no doubt. I think they've still got time to right the ship. And I think there's, even if this year is a disappointment, there's a number of kids that are disappointing, which means they'll be back. Maybe some of them will transfer, but then another healthy class coming in. Next year could be the year that everybody wants. We'll see how it plays out in the long run. Josh Marlow in Charlotte. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Thanks for the time. Have yourself a great weekend.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You too.
Jake Query, 1070 The Fan in Indianapolis, Indiana. Jake, how are you?
I am well, Jake. Was that the Superman team?
That's right. He's, you know, he's the meteor landed in Indiana,
I mean,
did it not?
Around the globe, right?
Yeah, there you go. That. Yeah, okay. That. Make sure. Oh, is Indiana Jones? Eh, whatever. You know, we had a good thing going here. Why don't need you messing it up, Adam? Shut up over there. Yeah, it was the Superman theme.
Cool. Superman
good call.
Cool.
Well done, Jake. Colts head coach. They were going to get one. Like Frank Reich's already got a gig in Carolina. Eric Bieniemy's been interviewed. Like, how long does Jim Irsay think he's got to keep parading around, acting like he hasn't made up his mind before he just makes Jeff Saturday the head coach?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. And the reality is the longer it goes on, the more it's going to appear that way. And, you know, it's going to come down to whether or not the Colts factor into any public relations or fan sentiment at all, whether they weigh that in. Certainly, there seems to be a dichotomy of opinion between Jim Irsay and perhaps what some of the brass within the Colts wants, because I think that Irsay really likes Jeff Saturday. But there seems to be, you know, he is open to listening to you know, the cases for other coaches. Bieniemy is interesting because, guys, I'll be honest, and I know that, you know, you kind of got the same vibe perhaps from Charlotte, you know, now that they've hired Frank Reich. I think Bieniemy's one that is really intriguing because Indianapolis talked to him, and you've got to wonder how much of that is head coach interview and how much of that is, hey, if we hire a head coach that, you know, we've got to hire an offensive coordinator with as well, which they're going to have to, do you want to come here and get out from underneath the wings of Andy Reid? That's not a bad thing. I'm not saying it that way. But to be the guy that is calling plays and to be able to show that you're on your own 2 feet is the final push, perhaps, to get you a head coaching job, even if he isn't offered the head coaching job here in Indy. So, you know, a lot of dominoes yet to fall in Indianapolis. They've been methodical. People are probably getting a little bit impatient, but the Colts are going on their own timeline for sure.
Yeah, they are. That's for sure. And I back up everything you said there about Eric Bieniemy. I've been saying it for a couple of years. So Marvin Lewis had to do it. He had to leave the Ravens, and he went 1 year, turned around the Washington defense, and that's what got him the Bengals job. Eric Bieniemy needs to check one more box, it seems like. Why not get to it? He's been interviewed allegedly, or at least there's interest to interview him down in Nashville with the Titans, so I think that wouldn't be a bad step before it's all said and done. What would the reaction be from the fans if Jeff Saturday's the coach? I mean, is that going to be a popular choice, or is it going to be one that sends everybody running from their tickets?
Here's the thing. We both know this. People will say they're going to run for their from their tickets. Are they going to actually do it? That's a different story. But, look, there have been a lot of surveys around town. There's a petition here locally that nearly 3,000 people have signed trying to tell Jim Irsay not to hire Jeff Saturday. The Indianapolis Star, one of the beat writers, did a Twitter poll, non-scientific as it may be. 93% said no. I think part of the thing with Jeff Saturday, quite frankly, is he was a beloved figure. He was great on ESPN. He was a great player. He was an underdog story. He was a crowd favorite. And I just don't think people want to go any further and having to feel like their warm and fuzzies about him would be tainted. And look, he said himself when he was hired as the interim coach that it comes down to wins and losses. And he's changed that tune a little bit by trying to point out some of the areas where they might have improved. But they went 1-7 over that stretch. So it would certainly be unpopular. And I think people would feel like they were sold a bill of goods by the quote-unquote thorough and exhaustive search, when in reality they went right back to where they started.
What's the plan at quarterback?
Boy, what are you doing next September?
That might be enough said. I don't know what you're going to expand on that. That might be enough said. No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
The time has come. Chris Ballard knows a general manager's clock truly starts when he drafts a quarterback, and he has stayed that as long as he can. The time is now. The time has come. They're drafting fourth. You know, whether or not a couple of teams vault in front of them, I just heard Charlotte talking about that. It's intriguing if Frank Reich would move in front of them, take Stroud or Young. I think they really like Will Levis. He might be moving up the board in front of them as well. They might have to move up, but I would anticipate that whether it's the guy that starts for them in week one, I don't know. But I think the long-term quarterback, or at least what they're hoping it will be, is the long-term answer finally for them, is on the roster at the beginning of the year, and it's probably a guy that was not in the NFL this year.
Hoosiers got off to a fast start, then they dropped 5 out of 7. They've now put together some wins as they've won, what, 4 in a row? How good is Indiana? Are they a tournament team?
They're a tournament team. I would say that they're good to very good. I don't think that they're any more than that. They would push, their ceiling would be to try to get into the second weekend of the tournament. Trace Jackson Davis is an elite player. He's an elite college player. That doesn't mean he's going to be a great pro player, but your job in college is to win in college. And he's a great college player.
so long as they can get some consistency from a secondary offensive spark for him, they win games, and they're awfully good because he's very difficult to stop. I think they're a tournament team. I think they are a top, probably by the time it's said and done, 3 or 4 team in the Big Ten, and probably somewhere between as high as a 4 and as low as an 8 seed, depending on what happens with the Big Ten tournament. But, you know, Purdue is the other one within the area, obviously, that's having an unbelievable year, and they could be in position for a number one overall seed in the tournament, which would be great for Matt Painter's group.
Yeah, and they got the National Player of the Year and Zach Edey, and just impossible to stop. It'll be interesting if this is Matt Painter's year to finally kick down the door and get to that Final Four. Jake Query, great stuff there in Indianapolis. We appreciate it. Have yourself a fantastic weekend.
Hey, man, you too. Rock chalk.
Pete Fox, KLOS in Los Angeles, California, is next. Pete, how are you, buddy?
Doing good, man.
Sean McVay stays. I guess everyone's happy, but is this going to be a year-to-year deal? Would they have been better off just saying, all right, you know, we don't want to spend the whole year talking about your future all the time and, and moving on? What's the reaction to him staying, and what's the reaction to Mike LaFleur as the new OC?
Well, let me turn that to you. Are you going to ask me every other week how much longer Sean McVay has? Because I feel like that's going to happen from you and from a lot of other people, especially if they – you know, get off to a bad start and, you know, don't make a bunch of moves because they can't afford to improve on the season they have this year. So I feel like that's what's in front of us. We're going to be hearing a lot about what's up, what's next for Sean McVay. Is he going to be the Rams coach next year, or is he going to be in the broadcast booth, et cetera, et cetera? And I feel, like I said, you know, a few weeks ago, I feel like if they have another sub-500 season and don't make the playoffs, I feel like he's going to cut bait and be like, I'm out of here. Won a Super Bowl, you're welcome, see ya. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, and listen, that's the reason why I asked the question, because, yeah, I think he was a bit of a distraction this year. Like, injuries are what derailed them, that and the guys they lost because of the cap situation. But if you're going to be, you know, if that's what it is, like, every week it's more about the coach than it is the team, I think that's a problem. And, you know, so I would have considered. I would have had a long talk with McVay and say, listen, we're not doing year-to-year here, man. Like, are you going to run this thing, or are you looking to get out? And if I didn't like the answer I heard, I would have pulled the plug and gone another direction. I know it's hard to do, but, I mean, bask in the glow of that Super Bowl trophy if you're going to do it.
Yeah. It feels like the boy genius thing has faded, and it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. You know, having been in the booth for a couple of seasons, you know, working on the broadcast team, like his thing is not terribly complicated, right? So I feel like it's like a pitcher that's young and nobody knows what he's going to throw, and then after they figure him out a little bit, you know, his brilliance has faded. And I think that's kind of what's going on with the Rams. Now, obviously, he hasn't forgotten how to coach, but I feel like a lot of people have figured out his boy genius schemes, and it's not quite as complicated, and it's not quite as hard to beat the Rams anymore, because what he's doing is not as, you know, as fancy as everyone ultimately thought it was.
Yeah, that's really astute on your part. I agree with you 100%, because I remember standing in front of Andy Reid, you know, in the midst of you know, I think it was post-19, maybe going into 20, or maybe it's coming out of 20, going into the 21 season, and talking to him about how, boy, no one can stop your offense with Patrick Mahomes. He's like, they always catch up. They catch up, and then we figure something new. And sure enough, the shell defenses and, you know, taking away Tyreek Hill over the top came around. It's like, damn, man, even with Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid was right. These guys get better, and I think you nailed it. They've done the same thing with Sean McVay. Staley, still on as the Chargers coach. Was that shocking to you?
Not really. You know, they did make a move firing the offensive coordinator because someone had to go, you know. Someone's head had to be put on a stick, and it turned out to be the OC. So, you know, I feel like the reason they lost that game was not just one person, right? I mean, you blow a 27-point lead. It's you can point fingers in a lot of different directions, and something had to happen. You and I texted about it right afterwards, because I was like, the only time he's going to get fired is if they lose, you know, by 40. You know, he'll be fired on the tarmac. Well, blowing a 27-point lead is in the exact same vein as losing by 40. So, yeah, I wasn't terribly surprised that they didn't fire him. I mean, let's put it the other way. I wouldn't have been surprised had they fired him. I agreed with you that, you know, a statement had to be made. But at the same time, I don't necessarily think he deserves to be fired because he's a good coach and he's got them going in the right direction. They're still a good team. And maybe changing the offensive coordinator is the solution. I think it was just a stopgap. You know, someone needed to be the fall guy, and it was the OC. So, I mean, you could point at Justin Herbert, too, and say, like, look, dude, you just were not good in the second half. So there was a lot of people that could take the blame for that embarrassing loss.
Yeah, who's the guy for OC? Any popular names that they want people to go after? I mean, nothing against Staley, and I think it's fine to bring him back. I would have never hired him because I'd never ever hire a defensive coach as a head coach in the NFL. By the way, I don't know if you noticed this, 4 offensive coaches coaching in the conference championships right now. But is there a popular name on where they might go with the offensive coordinator job?
Not really. I mean, nothing has jumped out to where, like, hey, this is the guy that's the front runner and this is the guy that they're really interested in. So I feel like they're going to take their time. And, you know, the Chargers don't generally do anything terribly fast. So they'll go through whatever process they go through and try to find what they think is the right guy.
All right. We'll see if that plays out in the long run. I bet we're having a conversation about Staley being let go next year, this time next year. So we'll see how it goes.
Surprising.
Yeah, Pete Fox in Los Angeles. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend, my friend.
You too. Thanks.
Yeah, I feel good.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Going to be juggling a couple of things up here. Right now, a press conference going on, a Zoom presser with J.J. Piccolo announcing the signing of Aroldis Chapman. We'll hear from J.J. Piccolo coming up in our Need to Know next segment. Normally, we do that at 5, but Adam Teicher has requested a change, so we will we'll change it up. Teicher's got getting pulled a lot of directions, as we all are here in Kansas City. I'm sure Teicher's probably having to do a Sports Center or do something with ESPN. So we're going to move him back to 5 o'clock. He would normally be right now. He'll be at 5. We'll do Need to Know coming up here in a little bit. A couple of nuggets that came out of the drill I want to expand upon. One, the Eric Bieniemy conversation about him as a potential head coach, talking about Steve Wilks being passed over for Frank Reich as the head coach. You've heard me give the spiel that I mentioned there to Josh about, you know, playing, coaching the quarterback position is an integral part towards getting a head coaching job, and Eric Bieniemy hasn't done that. He is at least on the right side of the ball as an offensive coordinator. I think he will be a head coach at some point. I think he does need to go someplace else. I was on this morning in Nashville, and they were just asking about the game, but then they said, all right, let's talk offensive coordinators. Matt Nagy, Eric Bieniemy, what are your thoughts on whether or not either one of them would be a good candidate for offensive coordinator and which one it would be? And I said, look, in the conversations I've had, I think the fact that Eric Bieniemy's name is out there as an OC job means I think he's come around to the idea that he's going to have to go someplace else and prove it again. You know, we can debate whether or not he should have to, but that's going to have to happen. Again, Marvin Lewis had to do as a defensive coordinator before he got the head coaching job with the Bengals. So I said, so I think he's legit. He'd be interested if we've gotten to that point. I said, I think Matt Nagy'd be interested. I get the feeling, though, like, one, Eric Bieniemy needs to go somewhere else. So if he's offered the offensive coordinator job anywhere, you know, not just any job, like, I don't know, I mean, the Colts, an offensive coordinator, I mean, like, what's the quarterback? Jeff Saturday's your coach. I mean, listen, if the offense is good, you're going to get all the credit in the world. I don't think Jim Irsay is that stable. But the Tennessee Titans, Mike Vrabel's a hell of a head coach. He doesn't coach either side of the ball, and the side of the ball he was on was the defensive side. What better position than to go in, have a big back, a big running game, a head coach that's going to basically stay out of your way, and take that job. Either take a healthy Ryan Tannehill further or nurture a young quarterback and have success on offense, you write your ticket then. Call the plays, you write your ticket. I think the problem is we usually look at these things with our own insecurities. Oh, God, that job sucks. Like, here he's got Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and you know, all this talent. And yeah, and that's why he's not getting a job. Right? Owners, I think you're getting smarter. Don't just hire the caddy for the best quarterbacks. We've seen numerous guys that coordinated for Tom Brady go and get jobs and not do squat. That's been going on for a long time, right? Like, if you can go and turn a program around, that's where you're really getting something done. If you're good at what you do, you shouldn't be trying to cherry pick the perfect scenario that already has quarterback, running back, wide out. Go to the place that has none of that. Be a part of finding all of that and putting it together into a cohesive offense, and you make your candidacy as an offensive coordinator or as a head coach bulletproof. What if he takes that offense, makes it more dynamic, throws the ball better, makes it less reliant on Derrick Henry, keeps Derrick Henry healthy for a whole season? What a novel idea. If you're going to have the most important part of your offense be the running back, how about keep him healthy? If he could go and coordinate that, Titans go back to the playoffs, have a good showing with the offense, I think Eric Bieniemy has answered every question. Every question other than, can he put together a dynamic interview with an owner? I don't know, but again, you've heard my thoughts. Based on his press conferences here, which have gotten a lot better, I don't see where he probably knocks it out of the park as an interviewer. Eventually, Tony Dungy had so much success in Tampa, you know, as a defensive coordinator, that he got the job in Tampa. His success in Tampa, which didn't win a championship, got him the job in Indianapolis. He went on to win a Super Bowl, and you know, the rest is history. I think Eric Bieniemy could do the same thing. If he goes down, he gets it done, and now Mike Vrabel is vouching for Eric Bieniemy, I think there's no way he wouldn't get hired. I think he would get hired, you know, after 1 year if the offense became dynamic under his watch. I think that's the best spot, near as I can tell, for Eric Bieniemy to go. Matt Nagy would bump up. But I think even if Matt Nagy doesn't bump up, you know, I hear he likes it in Kansas City. I hear his family likes it in Kansas City. And come on, connect a dot. His college teammate is the general manager. Who's going to be the next coach of the Kansas City Chiefs whenever Andy Reid walks away? Even money bet that it's Matt Nagy from whatever position he comes from. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll give you the things you need to know. We'll hear from the podium. We'll hear from J.J. Piccolo. It's all coming up next here in the program.
Friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. There it is.
But
the power. Does it? The power. Good job. He picked the quick learner.
He noticed right away.
Richard got it right away.
Does it begin right now?
That's right. It begins. Oh, no, it doesn't. Ah, my bad. Never mind.
Automatic muscle reaction with the
you hear that music?
Yeah. Calling off the jam. Got to call off the jam.
It's kind of like it was Sando.
I forgot we had to juggle things up because of Adam Teicher's self-important ass.
Boy.
Whatever you want, Adam.
Spartans,
change
man.
The whole day.
Spartans.
We just called for the fourth quarter early, but, you know,
right.
Okay. Whatever makes you
we'll
happy.
We'll play like it's still the third quarter. We got work to just finish off this drive here. Put it in the end zone, then it's fourth quarter.
That's right. Finishing the third quarter strong here. We get to our need to know. Of course, first things first, Patrick Mahomes, full go again today at practice. He has no injury designation. We know that's hogwash, but three players are listed as questionable. Travis Kelce, he was a full go today, however, in practice, listed as having a back injury. Mecole Hardman, pelvic. It's pelvic.
Pelvic.
I wish Mike Tyson had said that once. We'd play that all the time. And Justin Watson listed as questionable with a illness. Patrick Mahomes, are you okay with no injury designation? Is it like it's so known he's clearly hurt that like it doesn't even matter? But
I think, yeah, I don't know what the designation is as far as play. I think they're saying he's going to play. Well, by not putting questionable on there, but I mean, I think most people believe that. I mean, Travis Kelce and Mecole Hardman are both listed as questionable. I don't think there's I don't think they have the same chance of playing.
Right, I would agree.
I'm almost certain Travis Kelce will play. I'm very doubtful that, although they didn't put him as doubtful, I'm much less sure that Mecole Hardman will play.
Are you allowed to put doubtful anymore, or was it probable that they pulled?
They pulled probable.
Okay.
It's only questionable and doubtful.
Yeah, but the Patriots got in trouble for not listing Tom Brady like 17 years before his departure, and so they listed him as questionable with a shoulder.
Every week. Yeah.
For the rest of his time there. Yeah, there we go. Thank you. I appreciate it. Confirmed there as a right answer. All right, let's hear from the podium today. I believe if the Chiefs are going to win, the defensive line, the front four, and the whole rotation, not just Chris Jones, are going to have a day. They got to get Joe Burrow to the turf. They've got to do it multiple times. Frank Clark at the podium today was asked, what makes Burrow so tough to sack?
I think just number one, I feel like pocket quarterback. I feel like he's the best in the game. You got that Peyton Manning in him. You know, no matter how many times he gets hit, no matter how many times he gets knocked down, he's getting back up. He's controlling, bringing and pulling his offense back together and making adjustments and making the right plays. He knows how to read safeties and he knows how to read the defense. And when you're an immature defense or when you're, you know, a defense that, you know, you can't really disguise the coverages or disguise things, he's going to pick you apart every time. And I feel like in the past, and you know, last three games, those are things that he's been able to do is just exposes and you know those different aspects.
We just call his defense immature.
That's pretty funny.
Is there a little bit of a well, it's the secondary's fault.
Yeah, it's like they're young, but like in immature is like they're not walking around, you know, lighting farts in the locker room. I don't think he means immature by that.
No, but like,
but it's just funny to hear that word in that context.
But he talked about disguising coverages.
Yeah.
You talk about being immature at getting to the quarterback.
I was trying to tell them about their duty the other day, and they kept giggling.
Yeah.
Duty.
Yeah. I don't know. I like
Frank Clark. Is always an interesting listen.
It always makes you think, that's for sure. Same with Chris Jones, playing the Bengals for the fourth time in 2 years. It's kind of like a division rival, right? He talked today and asked if this is a rivalry.
Sort of a rivalry. Yeah, you can say that. It's been huge games that we have to play them in. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to win not one of them. So, you know, for our end, it's a rivalry is when you go back and forth for winning and losing, winning and losing. We haven't beaten them yet, so I don't think we can call it a rivalry yet. Or that's kind of far-fetched.
Love me some Chris Jones, too.
I do.
He's not afraid to say what it is.
Nope.
By the way, can I just point out again, walked by him in the locker room the other day, and he and I are the same species, allegedly. I mean, yeah, he's every bit of 6'6". He's all of 6'6". And, you know, he is a impressive, you know.
Yep.
What always gets me is the number, when you don't spend any time around professional athletes, when you hear the number 295 pounds, you get a vision of your head and what that looks like. And he looks nothing like what most people would envision 295 pounds looking like.
No.
I don't think there's an ounce of fat on the guy.
No, he's really impressive.
It's remarkable.
He's an impressive physical guy. And listen, he was a big guy when he got here and not a big fat ass either. He's just a big guy. Now he is... He, you know, well, this subject came up, you know, Eric Eager on our Red Golden Bull podcast was talking. He's like, well, Chris Jones isn't, you know, he's not imposing. He's not impressive. Like I said, you haven't been around him, Eric. I've been in that locker room. He's freaking impressive. You know, J.J. Watt is impressive. I remember seeing J.J. Watt at the Super Bowl, and he looked almost comedic how wide his shoulders were.
Yes.
He looked like, you know,
it's
are like, you trying out
like
for Frankenstein?
It's like a cartoon
what's
character.
Going on here? Chris Jones is a little more bodybuilder-esque looking, like more proportioned.
Right.
Like J.J. Watt's shoulders really are kind of freakishly large, but he is a very impressive looking guy. And again, I think a lot of it's going to come down to him and the rest of the defensive line to getting the win in this game. Chris Jones was asked about getting a chance at redemption against the Bengals.
Listen, God is good, man. It's like a full 360, right? Same thing, same circumstances under Burrowhead Stadium, so feeling good about it.
Did you just say Burrowhead Stadium?
Yeah, Burrowhead Stadium, right? Yeah.
Hey, Chris, it seems like you guys have been pretty conscious of not, let's say, doing trash talk during the week back at them. How does that stuff, though, play into what your own mentality is as you deal with what you're hearing from them?
You know, I can't control anyone else. I think this program is run like that. It's been run like that for years. We don't do a lot of talking. We just go out and play the game respectfully.
That's what he's going to say. Maybe they're not being respectful over there. Justin Reed did pop off. Let's be clear. Andy Reed didn't like it. We know that. But he did pop off. Willie Gay did pop off yesterday. I thought Chris Jones did a pretty good job. You know, he's subtle. When he left, he said, okay, I'll see you guys at Burrowhead. He got that dig in again. I think Chris Jones is going to be a man on a mission. I think he's going to wreck some people. You're going to see the best of Chris Jones in this game. That's what I think is coming.
I agree. If that happens, we will not be surprised. We'll know what the motivation from it was.
Along the Burrowhead lines, Frank Clark was asked about the Bengals calling it Burrowhead.
You know, it's going to motivate those who are listening and those who are watching, you know, I guess. But, I mean, when you're not one of those guys who are paying attention to those things, I don't think it's going to motivate you at all. I mean, at the end of the day, trash talk is trash talk. You know, you're going to hear it. People are going to say the things they're going to say. But, I mean, at the end of the day, they got the right to call it whatever they want. I mean, at the end of the day, when you have the win, you have the last laugh. They have the last laugh right now. So all we can do is look forward to the matchup that we got this Sunday. You know, go out there and, get our laugh back. But at the end of the day, they got the last laugh. You know, they've won the last three games. They've held us from going to the Super Bowl last year. And then in the regular season this year, they defeated us. So it's been a lot of close games. I believe we lost about 3 points for all the three of those games. So it's a game that's coming down to the wire. But obviously, they're able to finish them. And defensively, you know, we've let the games out of our hands. So we just got to collectively, as an offense and defense, finally bring it together and win the game.
I love the honesty there of Frank Clark. We've said it many times. If you're up there and you're refs this or that or whatever, we haven't won. That's a man who's confident. He believes he can win or he wouldn't be so acknowledging of the fact that they have failed. They sound like a confident bunch to me. Of course, we'll find out on Sunday if that is the case. Rhaldis Chapman, it's official. We've heard about it for about a week now, but the Royals made it official, getting him signed today. I presume it took a little time to get him here in town to take the physical. J.J. Piccolo, VP of Baseball Ops and General Manager of the Royals, held a Zoom just a few minutes ago. Piccolo was asked about the way last season ended for Rhaldis Chapman.
Yeah, we did a lot of work on Aroldis in his background, his character. We've spoken to teams that have had him. We spoke to the Yankees. We have a pretty clear understanding of what happened at the end of the year. It's unfortunate, but those things happen in sports. And, you know, in talking to Aroldis, you know, he's as disappointed with how the year ended as the Yankees were. And he's really just looking to put that behind him and wants to finish a career that's already been a historic career and wants to just move forward. But, you know, those questions were asked and we were comfortable with the answers. And I think he has a great understanding of what was good and what wasn't good and really just is looking forward to his future.
Yeah, you know, Rhaldis Chapman left the Yankees at the end of the year, said he wasn't going to be on the playoff roster, so he took off. There was some discussion as to whether or not, you know, the Yankees didn't make it clear whether or not he was on or off the playoff roster, but then Brian Cashman definitely said, no, you're not coming back. You don't like that. You don't want to see a guy leave a team. I get all that. What kind of team is he going to be in the clubhouse? I do know that Salvador Perez goes over to his house and works out.
Right.
At his gym, at his house. Salvador Perez is certainly considered a good teammate if Salvador Perez is friends with you. And it's not like they're countrymen. Aroldis is from Cuba and Salvi's from Venezuela.
Yeah.
There's a camaraderie there between the two of them. So we know what this is. You know, a miracle happens and you contend, he closes. It doesn't happen, hopefully he closes and you trade him and get talent.
JG also said that no promises were made to Chapman about how many save opportunities you would get. So he didn't say, hey, this is your job from the outset. We'll see how that goes through spring training, but no promises made just yet.
All right, we'll take a break when we come back. Adam Teicher, the Teich Bag, talking Chiefs football.
All right, what team has the most home losses in the AFC Championship game? Brought to you by Good Sense.